right. This may have, again, yet again, the aspect of listening to Jason in the car. I'm Jason Nemro, and you're listening to me while I'm driving in a car. The very tail end, this is New Year's Eve, 2018. I got a horrible memory, so I'm going to have to recap probably everything that you've heard before. Going on, the things that Lisa and I have talked about. It's been a good Christmas time. We had some of the kids with us. Some really exciting stuff. Josh just let us know that a couple of days ago he proposed to Alejandra Quintana, and she said yes. Woo-hoo! So. We're going to be getting everything together for that kind of stuff. It's all complicated by the fact that we're going to go ahead and start moving. Go ahead and make Lisa's situation go a little better. And talk about, I don't know, see, here's the tricky part. You never really know if Lisa's on board, and then she'll tell you a couple of weeks later, well, of course we're doing it. But it was never clear to me whether it was really happening or not. I have to send up a lot of trial balloons and some of the ideas she likes or that she's willing to do. Were just trial balloons. She thinks that they weren't. She thinks they were actually, this is what we're going to do. And it's like, it was just a proposal. You didn't tell me if it was okay with you. So, and it's okay. It just gets a little crazy when it's like, I can't make decisions or make plans because I don't know. You know, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I think the plan is now that Lisa and Matt are going to go ahead and move into Mirror Cottage. They're in Tucumcari. Go ahead and start getting things kind of set up. I think that's a good thing to do instead of trying to put off doing that until after we have the job at Extension. You know, Extension isn't going to give me any money to move. If they do, that would be amazing. So I'm not counting on it. And, We're going to go ahead and get things kind of pulled together over there. I'm actually driving to Tucumcari right now just to turn on some taps a little bit. I'm going to do some more stuff too. But turn on some taps to make sure that the pipes don't freeze. It's going to be down in the lower teens the next couple of days, and so we're just going to keep the water running for a little while out of all the taps to make sure nothing freezes up, and that's going to go good. We go good. So, I'm going to go ahead and spend some time today going through that outbuilding, tearing down some stuff in preparation for going ahead and tearing it out completely. in preparation to put in a much larger storage facility there. You know, Lisa wants to store a lot more stuff. Plus, there's practically no storage in the house at all. The house is absolutely taken up by just living in it. So the storage that we had been having in the other parts of the house that we've had lots of storage, now we're going to have to bring in a storage building to do that. We're planning on getting a pretty good size one. Probably use up all the excess funds that we have right now just to do that. And then we'll have to start saving up from that little place. Matt's going to get a little place to stay, too. We're not going to add on the house. We're going to... The plan is to put a little house out back, like a little mother-in-law house out back, so that Matt can stay out there. The house is of a construction and a make that I think trying to do particular updates on it is going to be a little tricky. And since our situation is somewhat static, you know, that's going to be that's not going anywhere. It's not going to live with anybody else. We want him to have his own place as much as he can. So this is the way to do it. Just to keep it so that things are in good shape. So, well, we kind of got it fine. And so I'm going off to different carry to take care of some of them and start getting some of the ball rolling. The thing to make something happen is to go ahead and start doing it and then start it rolling, and then inertia will often carry it through to completion. So we're going to start working on that, making all that stuff happen. Great. And, let's see here. What else? Of course, I went ahead and registered mom's car, hung on to it. I even ordered an amateur radio operator plate for it, man. So we're gonna keep this car rolling for quite a while. It's done well for mom. It's in pretty good shape, so we're just gonna keep on rolling with it. See how many hundred thousand miles we can get out of this sucker. Anyway, so been an interesting weekend. So yeah, Josh proposed, and that's all exciting. Got to talk to everybody yesterday. Pretty much flew them in on the whole thing. And, so yeah, when I think about Fertalis and the things I've been doing here, it's starting to come to a close. I need to finish up the work I'm doing at Eastern. I need to get them to a position where they're not having to, actually do major, huge updates. We're trying to get them all updated to the present. But we're pretty close. We're pretty close to it. We're about ready to virtualize just about everything. So that or he's turning. He's turning. Well, that's okay. It was nice to have him. Okay. Things are rolling pretty good. I was just reading this morning. There's this fella. And he was identifying American collapse. And I don't think he's wrong in saying that there is a collapse. He was also saying that we really underestimate it. And I think that's typical. I think that happens. I'm old enough to know, to have seen and been pretty coherent. I was in college when the Soviet Union pretty much fell apart. And it was surprising. They gave every indication right up until it just fell apart. That they were going to go just as long as, you know, as they wanted. That it was going to be, you know, it was doing fine. They were doing perestroika. They were doing, they were making some changes to try to kind of bring in a little bit more market-based stuff. They were seeing that that being totally communistic was problematic at best. And then, yeah, it was just like, 1 week, it was like, well, there's the Soviet Union, our old nemesis, and then all of a sudden, the next week, it was like, welcome to no more Soviet Union. It totally fell apart. Clearly. So, it's not, I think, I don't think it's the problem of, here, we're going to put this down here. Okay, I'm going to make the problems. I'm pretty much trying to call it hyper-capitalism. It's Kmart itself down on this particular outfit. This is medium. That's kind of a kind of not bleeding. Not the president. Socialized healthcare. Which I also I kind of have a problem with this landscape. I'm not saying he's wrong. The actual trouble. I think his take on describing them are wrong. Better than wrong. Good wrong.
Better trained teachers
what they're told. So, I cut their throat out like a bunch of them. One of the big problems that I always have. $2.09 here. That's a pretty good price. About the same price of a gas price as it was before. When you're traveling these long distances, gas price makes a big difference. Even a couple of pennies makes quite a bit of difference. I was telling Lee, I said, yeah, we're going to start having problems in about. Having two houses. He says, we need to start shutting down the other house pretty quickly. And the house in Portales. And get it ready for sale, put it on the market, and then just basically, I'll keep staying there until until my job in Tucum carries over. Now, if it sells before, then that's fine. You know, wow, that would be amazing if it sold quickly. Gotta be careful how fast I'm going in the big old town of Melrose. Anyway, ooh, hey, you haul. People are getting moved around. Yeah. Even little towns, man. Got stuff happening. Anyway, so, okay, we had all these different things, and this guy was not offering solutions. I know he's left-leaning socialist, but he might be smart enough to say, but I know that most of the ideas that are really near and dear to my heart, which are mostly hand them over to government, and government will make it work. See, because leftists are, you know, just as much as I'm a Pollyanna and kind of a libertarian for saying that your bootstraps can work good. Now, you can't go completely that way. You can't just completely do that. Socialists can't really do what they want to do either. They're Pollyannish about theirs, too. It is not the ultimate solution. You want to reduce violence in schools, how are you going to do that? And you go, you'll put in a police state. You know, metal detectors everywhere. Everything that we always said was really kind of wrong is exactly what your solution would look like. Stuff like that. Everybody be heavily psychoanalyzed. And 3/4 of the kids in your school getting some kind of really expensive psychological therapism. Let me tell you, man, if you want to have a guaranteed job from here until the end of time, man, become a therapist. Become a psychological therapist. They said, because let me tell you, everybody wants that. That's what socialists want. Socialists want everybody to spend half of their time with a therapist. And that therapist's job, it will be half be trying to help you, but it will mostly be trying to police you. I learned this to no uncertain terms when I was in child development. I worked under a grant the state had done. They really wanted to do some really big things around child care. They thought this was going to be a wonderful new way to make everything a whole lot better in New Mexico, was to invest a lot of money in kids. They didn't decide to go the school-based route, because apparently some people have some really big problems with that. And they chose to go with kind of a reimbursement it was a certification program that was based on adjusting your reimbursement as to how far in the certification scheme you went. The more you went through the certification scheme, the more your child care setting, mostly child care centers, would behave like heavily socialized, worse than schools, for just being kind of, you know, march the kids around, do a lot of stuff. It was going to feel more and more like an evolved form of Head Start. They really wanted all the places to behave like Head Start. This was their way of trying to get it done. And my agency was supposed to help with the training. If you got so much training, you got up to higher forms of certification. Now it had to do with doing a lot of observations, doing a lot of ratings. So we actually went to some, we actually did a lot of trainings to try and figure out where you could make sure that we all gave people kind of the same ratings. We spent some time on that. Very interesting. Did I have a serious problem with it? Yeah, I did, you know. So this was horrible. Any avenue that socialists can get to try to execute their kind of one size fits all, the whole universe would be great if we were all heavily managed with layers and layers and layers of management. Every socialist dream is to be a manager, and to be a manager who is unquestioned, worshipped, and pretty much telling people what they should do, and not just giving them advice and then they can take it or leave it. No, it was really about, is there some way I can force them to do what I want them to do? You don't want to call it that, but that's really what it ultimately ends up being. Is there a way that I can coerce them? And you can try bribery, you can try 500 other things. And that's what I experienced with the child care training program, was this kind of, we're going to put all of these child care centers as much as we can under management. And I'm against that. I want people to be free. Now, do I want people to be smart? Do I want to educate them? Do I want to hopefully persuade them through preaching, through persuasion to do good things? Now, here's probably the biggest rub of all. Not only is there the whole kind of coercion going toward force aspect of socialism, But here's the other funny part about it. Guess what? What they're trying to make you do, it isn't even really, I'm pretty sure that it's not even a good thing to do. What they're trying to make you do isn't really going to help you. So it's got two kind of parallel aspects to it that make socialism evil. They will convince you as hard as they can that they kind of play the two different parallel things off of each other, and if socialism isn't making the world a better place, they'll basically blame one side of that thing or the other for the fact that there's problems, that it's not working as advertised. And let me tell you, socialism never works as advertised. Or if it does, it's so rare that it's amazing if it does ever at all. So that was what I was getting at, this whole guy's thing. It wasn't that he wasn't seeing problems and saying, hey, these were problems, and you're going, yes, I think you are pointing out problems. You're describing them in very loaded ways that already presuppose what the solution should be. Now, I think it's hilarious because he did come back and he said, one of our problems is families aren't doing their job. They aren't working. And you're going, yeah, can I tell you why they're not working? It's because of socialism. Socialism kills the family. We can all help each other, but we don't do it in a socialistic way. We don't say, okay, and I'm going to give you this help because this, 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 and this. And you're going to have to give up this, this, and this power, that's right, over to this larger entity. And they will control this, 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 and this aspect of your life. I have a real problem with that. I don't think that's the right way to go at all. But all these things kind of presuppose that, of course, this is the methodology that should be used. Is that we kind of hand over all this, all of these problems to the collective, and the collective can solve them by taking away resources. But here's the problem, here's the rub. They said, every collectivization wants to have as much resources as it can. Now, if it's you joining kind of a club or a lodge or something, that club or lodge wants to pretty much have you pay pretty much everything that you possibly can into it. Because that empowers the collective to do a whole lot more things. And it's very attractive. And that... And that it'll, you know, people like to be able to voice their troubles, their problems, their issues on somebody else. It's wonderful. And if somebody else promises, hey, I'll take care of it for you, for your whatever price it's being exacted. The best part is if you can get somebody else to pay that price, and if it somewhat costs you nothing. You can kind of do that to an extent. Communism is that. I actually make a distinction between communism and socialism. Communism says we'll take all the rich people's stuff and we'll distribute it evenly among everybody else, and everybody will have some stuff. That's basically communism. Now, that works for about, I don't know, 20 years. Once you've stolen all the rich people's stuff, once you've taken it all over, and you've got it all distributed, that takes time. That takes time. Can't do it quickly. You can see it in the progression of the Soviet Union. The actual revolution from 1920 until about, the mid-1930s was this whole thing of we're taking away all the rich people's stuff and giving it to other people. And that was a halfway decent way of things did get better. For the poorest people, things did get better. They had a place to live. They had stuff to do. Now, this is a very naive way of looking at it. I'm sure people say, oh, I can give you plenty of examples where that wasn't true. And you go, that's fine. I think, by and large, the first 20 years was doing stuff like that. The next 20 years was interesting because it was screwed up in World War II. And everything kind of got really weird. And of course, Stalin came in. And it had a lot to do with during World War II. It was a wonderful time for the birth of what we would call the Soviet Union. The Soviet Union kind of became something. Europe essentially was split in two between Russian-dominated Eastern Europe and American, British, French, Western domination of Western Europe. And communism did great there. They took the wealth of other places, Ukraine, Serbia, whatever. They kind of sucked in more wealth and communized it. And that kept them going for another 20 years or so. It took them about that much time to finally fully kind of do everything. They were very interesting in that not only were they stealing the riches of these regions, they were also moving in Russians and setting them up there. It's kind of a little bit of colonialization. A lot of people don't talk about it. That's why right now Crimea is an interesting thing. It was actually the homeland of a totally different people, but they had colonized it so well with Russians that you have this whole thing of, hey, you could even do an election and the Russians would win. Even though this really wasn't Russian territory in particular. So, people that had more affinity with Russia than they had with Ukraine, and therefore it just kind of fell apart. They called, breakaway and all this other stuff. And you go, no, they voted. And they said they wanted to be part of Russia. And you go, yeah. Says that Ukraine lost pretty much their, most of their connection to the Black Sea, which is a huge trade route for that part of the world. And then you go to the Black Sea and you trade among them, and that is your ticket to the Mediterranean. And from the Mediterranean on to the rest of the world. It's a huge supply route. Let me tell you, shipping by land is expensive. Shipping by sea is less expensive. And that becomes a huge thing, and people don't really give that much of a thought. They don't consider it. It's always been true. And because you can ship so much more at the same time. But with rather inexpensive maintenance costs, the cost of actually, you know, keeping a waterway open and navigable is minuscule compared to having to lay and maintain rails. It's a lot cheaper than having to do roads. Anyway, it's been one of the more interesting problems for, especially the Western United States. We really have no navigable rivers here. The things that we call rivers are mostly streams, and they're very shallow. They can't be used for heavy transport. Just can't be used that way. Anything on this side of the Mississippi River pretty much is not very useful that way. The Mississippi River is an excellent river for transport, getting supplies and everything else up and down river. Marvelous engineering that goes on the Mississippi River. Environmentalists are absolutely ding-bat, ding-dong stupid. Because they all say, oh, don't put in dams, don't put in this, don't put in that. And you're going, oh my gosh, are you crazy? This is what makes this place work. Environmentalists think that the middle of the country should basically be uninhabited. And let me tell you, they're getting their wish. The reason why the Tucumcari, New Mexico still exists and will probably continue to is because you need kind of a watering hole as you go along to get more gas, to sleep the night sometimes if you didn't plan well. What are some other reasons why? Anyway, and it's basically a place to eat, a place to lay down your head. A place to go to the bathroom, you know. It's just a way station. But you have to have people there to maintain it. You have to have people there to make sure that these things are present. And that's interesting. You know, when they say, well, this is a good place for agriculture, and you're going, well, you know what? I would have to almost disagree. I said, range cattle can work. Like, I'm passing by right now a field with some cattle in it. They've raised them here, dry land, it looks like. And now they've got cows on it. It's mostly a stubble of what was left. And that's normally what cows are. They're just turning stubble into meat as kind of a secondary market. I don't know if it's secondary or primary. I don't know. But it could be seen that way. Trying to get the most value out of a situation. Anyway, so well, there's forest. Am I already in a forest? Wow, okay, I've been in Clay County for a little bit. One of the little towns that doesn't really exist particularly anymore, but there's still some people around it. It's called Forest. And as I recall, there's still an Extension Homemakers Club. functions out of Forrest. Yeah, a neat little place, you know. There's an old school there, nice old school. Now it's an absolute, it's just an absolute shell now. Or at least it was a shell last time I looked. You know what? I should go. I'm going to go drive past it, knowing that if all this stuff kind of falls together, as I hope it will, this will be one of the places that I have to connect with. Now, there's another one over here called House, which my kids went to school at the House Learning Center. So I've got some connection. I really don't have much connection with Forrest at all. People in the Forrest area go to the Melrose School. So they really don't have ties to Quay County at all, except it's their county. Extension Home Economist in Curry County, the next county over, which is Clovis, and it's in Byron. She lives in Melrose, and Glenda Belcher. I kind of like Glenda. She's an interesting sort. It's going to be interesting being her co-worker rather than... What I was doing was I was doing all the computer maintenance and stuff like that for this part of the state. So I traveled a whole lot. I'll still be traveling with this job, so that might be kind of fun. And, yeah, the shell is still here. So the shell of the school still exists. And that's pretty much what this place was. It was a school. And there were some people around here. There's actually... Anyway, as you can see, there was some stuff. That's mostly all school, but... And yeah, the shell's still here, the hull of it. And then there's a handful of people that live around here. But this is mostly just what it is. Boy, it's a cool-looking school on the front of it. Nice-looking place. That's a shame, you know. It could probably be, you know, but there's absolutely no reason for it to exist. There's a fire department here. There's a couple of places with houses, and most of the two houses here are totally right. And then there's a community church, and that's it. Welcome to Forrest. And that's kind of the story of a lot of these little places here. Some of them have a reason for being, some don't. There's another little town over here called Ima. That's just north of McAllister. McAllister actually is a place because it still has a post office. I don't know which post office serves Forrest, but I know that there's no post office there. It might be the post office at a creek. Anyway, and oh, regardless. There's these paved roads, and there's only just kind of a paved road that goes out to Forrest and then turns to dirt. And you're going, wow, this is a road that might be deemed unnecessary anymore. But you try to get to people where they are, help people where they are and what they can do to try to make life still tenable. and hopefully give them the kind of tools that they need to continue to raise families here, have a life. That involves making a living. And I try to always put things in that context because that's kind of the way I look at it. I guess I'm a larger picture person, always have been, for saying that this is really about family. Because it's sad to see every day the kids I used to teach out at San Juan, and remember this one young guy, good kid. And it was all about, you know, his greatest joy was to try to take over the family ranch. And I told him, I said, you know, I said, that's probably not going to ever happen. I said, it presupposes two or three things. Number one is that your parents, the ones that are living on it now, that they aren't going to, need to just continue running it themselves without you having a whole entire family to try to keep alive too. I said, that's tricky, man. I said, I don't mean to be rude, but yeah. Just timing probably isn't going to be the best. Can I be honest? He says, now you pray to God and you get him to help you. I said, some pretty amazing things can happen. You're likely to see some miracles. This is a time of miracles. And you'll be able to just spot them and say, dude, miracle right there. And you go, yeah, amazing, isn't it? A lot of these houses are empty due to consolidation. I'm passing by and they have another empty house. Actually, it was a pretty nice looking house. Probably recently empty, the last 10, 20 years. And the biggest problem with these is number one, it's timing. Number two, it's consolidation. You know, these ranchers that keep going, they consolidate. They buy out their neighbors, and they have larger and larger spreads, and they run more and more and more cattle because the margins are slimming out a ton. If you want to keep up the kind of lifestyle that you become kind of accustomed to, it's tricky. And things like the tax law and farm bills aren't really working in your favor. You really are having to compete with other countries that don't have the expenses that you do. Like this place out here, you know? There's somebody living there? You know? It might be somebody's kid. They actually live in Clovis, but they've decided that driving back and forth to a house that's long paid for and might have low expenses, it's less expensive than trying to live actually in Clovis and pay rent or house or whatever else happens there. You know, it's just an interesting reality. We've really sold our souls to the devil. And can I tell you what the devil is? It's razor-thin margins caused by absolutely insane productivity. I'm sorry, productivity in my viewpoint is evil. You don't want amazingly productive people. They're not good. You don't want to be bringing in these guys who are scared to death that they're going to die from, like, Mexico, for instance. And they'll work 18-hour days for you, and you can pay them pennies on the dollar. You don't want to do that. you know, and I know Jeff, but they'll say, that's the only way I can stay alive and keep my family fed and give them the kind of opportunities that I think a person should have. You know, I can't send three kids to college unless I've got just barely a step above slave labor, you know, out there making it happen. I don't get to go into town and go to K-Bob and have steak dinners. Unless I do things this way. This is a big societal problem. Now, the socialist solution to that is, well, there's some fat cat. The only problem is they consider you a fat cat. You know, if you've got 5 or 6 guys from Mexico who are up here, you know, working 18-hour days for $2 or $3 a day, staying out in some ratty old beat-up trailer that you're paying for their utilities, and you're going, you know what? That sounds so close to slavery that it's scary. I'm not saying you're a bad person. I don't think the people that did slavery were bad people. I know I'm horrible to say. They weren't bad people. They were doing what they felt like needed to be done to keep up their standard of living. And yeah, did it make these huge dichotomies? Just slavery for people. And then a handful of really rich folk, you know, who get to basically just kind of, they live on the plantation that's actually, you know, in the plantation house that's actually on the plantation, but they might not even know what they're doing. It may not even be important. You know, they've got hired hands that actually know what they're doing. Oh, this brings up a whole thing. This interesting thing I'm passing, right? Just right in half by Raglan. It's interesting. Somebody bought up this piece of property, and I was looking to buy it so that I could try to renovate it or something, try to turn it into a house. And this fellow bought it, and I'm pretty sure the only reason why he bought it was because he knew that they were going to put up a cell tower on it, and that is leasable. You know, he could actually make back quite a bit of money. It's actually a good investment to buy up land that somebody else is going to feel inclined to lease. And that's kind of cool. All this infrastructure that's needed for, like, keeping your cell phone working, doing that. Oh, Lisa likes going down this hill from Raglan into Quay Valley. And it is. It feels like she loves being up high and looking into a valley. We were trying to find some way to buy a piece of property up here. Raglan was the most available way to do that. We might still ultimately do it while still keeping our house there. I don't know. Really kind of, I don't know, keeping my options of what might happen in the future. Anyway, so, yeah. That's kind of how things go now. Ranch hands, stuff like that. Almost all these guys out here started out as ranch hands back in the days before there was really a lot of, I'm just grabbing Mexican and just, I'm not paying them anything. You know, and ranch hands normally worked for food and a place to stay and a truck and stuff like that. All that stuff belonged to the rancher himself, to, you know, as if you see it described, it does. It really is serfdom. Ranch hands were serfs out here. And you would have to kind of take advantage of the fact that you would need to go to family to them. I know a good friend of mine eventually got her master's in sociology, I think. Her bachelor's or something. She got one of her degrees in sociology. She started kind of doing social work. And she ended up being working for CYP. And they got a pretty nice house now. And I also noticed that they're taking care of several kids. They're doing foster care. A lot of people do that here. It's pretty good money. You know, you take screwed up kid that just have got so many problems that their parents couldn't take care of them, or they were abandoned or whatever, and you gotta take them somewhere. And so there was an agency here run by a couple of people that I could never feel good. It was like dancing with the devil. They eventually got taken over and bought out. Well, they didn't get bought out. They just disappeared and somebody else took over their stuff. And they have a pretty good thing going. And I can't say they were evil, but they weren't good people. And I would have worked for them. I tried a couple of times. I took a job with them. And I would end up working there for maybe a couple of hours or a couple of days before I turned to my dad. Like, no, I'm not dealing with this. I'm not going to live like this. And there's mostly the whole attitude that, hey, we'll take care of you. Don't worry, we'll take care of you. And it's like, I would rather have some actual employment restraint rather than just trusting. Because the people that trust them, guess what? They are out of work now. They mostly got in trouble. Now, it never came out. It was never proven because they folded up before there could be any proof done. But apparently they didn't keep the records right. They billed for more than what they were supposed to be billing for. They were saying that services were going on that weren't really being provided. Yada, yada, yada. They were basically building the state. The state finally came through and said, okay, we're gonna actually audit these people. And they left. She was a social worker. They lived in Hawaii. They lived in Hawaii. Young couple. Let me tell you, she was a piece of work. He was a licensed vocational nurse. She was a one-year nurse. And what he ended up being was, I thought he was the biggest snake oil salesman that I've ever seen. I'm not going to say what name they were, because that's not important except to know I've known a lot of them. So sometimes I'm willing to say what they are. They were snake whales. Yeah, I'll be the first to say, hey man, I got my master's degree, the cheapest, slimiest, most underhanded way I possibly could. And I might very well get my PhD that way too. It's doable. Now, I intend to do that and then try to do something good at it. Try to make something good happen. I am much more a cooperative person. I want people to come together for their common good, to make voluntary associations with each other, and work together for their own common good. I'm a big proponent of those kinds of solutions. If you want to try to do something that smells socialistic, make it voluntary, and also make it so that it can dissolve pretty readily, too. Because people have to get up and leave them. I think we need to go back to older forms for how to handle these smaller places that continue to shrink. Chicken Ferry is now under 5,000 people. At its apex, I think it was, I forget. Its apex actually happened in like 1950 from the census record. That was really the highest population ever had, and it's been in decline since 1950, which is actually amazing. I thought its heyday was more in the 60s or maybe even into the 70s, but it actually started shrinking since then. Combination of a lot of things, mechanization. You could do what needed to be done around here with less people. Like I've always said, this is not to say, I'm not trying to be rude or trying to speak poorly on one plan. This is Martin Lorraine's way. They worked hard, and this was almost 100 years ago now. They put together the things, tried to do irrigation here. They ran irrigation ditches from the Canadian River. They actually made a dam up by Conscious. It's now Conscious Lake. It was Conscious Dam. There was also a dam at Butte Lake. And all of these things were to collect that water and distribute it for agricultural purposes. Now that's not so much true anymore. They're wanting to put in a pipe all the way from Logan, which is where you live here, all the way down to Clovis and Pertown, who they are concerned are going to be running out of water soon. And my thing is, hey dude, if you don't have water there, my advice is to abandon the place. When they tried to get rid of Kennan Air Force Base, it was probably about 10 years ago, and they went through such a political rigmarole trying to keep it going. I thought it was misguided. Because it's like, now there's no water in here. Because you have to drill deeper and deeper and deeper, and we don't know how long it's got left. One of my reasons for leaving the palace is that the water's going to go dry. And I know you've seen some ghost towns where it looks like that it was just that it just wasn't big enough to be viable. You're going to see ghost towns soon that were quite large, like Pertowers. I think Pertowers will one day be a ghost town. I think the state of New Mexico will say, you know what, we're consolidating down. The water's running out for talent anyway, because we need to shut down that school. That's just snow is going to cease to exist. Yeah, they'll just be state land and find something to fix that up, whatever. I will not be surprised. I don't know if that's a prophecy or just that, a premonition or whatever. But yeah, I think Lois and Kratalis are going to essentially pull up stakes and stuff. And we'll still have some agriculture there, but it's not very tenable agriculture. It cannot compete with agriculture like, say, here in Clay County or around Chisholm County, because there's actual water here, replenishable water. Now, has it been great? No. The Arch Hurley Water Conservancy District, that's the guys actually run the canal that take care of this stuff. More times than not, there's not been enough water to take care of it. Now, if climate change is anybody's guess, this place could become a garden place. It could become amazing. And that would be great. That would be wonderful. But yeah, because I don't have high hopes for Clovis or for Tala. Probably not even Mule Shoe either. That whole region there kind of just dying out. Because let me tell you, if the air base goes, that's about, I don't know if it's a third of the economy, probably. Might be a little bit more, I'm not sure. Anyway, it certainly isn't the kind of place where you'd have the normal influx of a whole bunch of young people with a lot of extra money and stuff like that. Car dealerships were just a busy clover. So, yeah. The whole can thing, trying to keep can alive, it's going to go worse and worse and worse because over time, Clovis is going to lose, number one, it's going to lose mostly its political resolve. This was the last gasp of the really old people that still kind of the fathers. It's called the Committee of 50. And I think it's pretty much down by the wayside, or it's being filled with really inconsequential people that don't have, that have not invested as heavily. And it can really say, you know what, I can go and leave and grow something else. Most of them have, you know. If you've got resources, you'll send your kid to college, and you're not going to send them to a local college, you're going to send them off to a better college. And once they go to that better college, they're not going to come back. They're not going to come back. It isn't like, oh, I was a doctor, so I invested in this and that and this and that. I own half this town. That's true in Tooth & Carry. A lot of Tooth & Carry was owned by two or three men, and they were predominantly doctors. And they did really great. It's really, it's been a wonderful time for doctors the last 30 or 40 or 50 years. But the sad part is that they haven't been replaced by new, rich, invested doctors. No. We've got guys with names that are 5 miles long. They're from foreign countries, Pakistan, India, places like that. You know, kind of the second gen doctors now. Doctoring became this amazing thing, very lucrative. We've already gone past the whole of being lucrative. Now it's just what foreigners do to try to get into the United States. And it's okay, you know. Are you going to get... It is a reflection on the kind of doctrine, although I do have a problem with the healthcare industry in general. It's getting far too socialized and too regulated, and I don't like it. Anyway, so there's two or three doctors that pretty much own large tracts of Tooth & Carry, you know, and they lived off of rents and they own key pieces of property, There's a lot of cronyism, or has been a lot of cronyism, in Tooth Carry in general. You know, the site of the present elementary school, the old elementary school in Tooth Carry now, was the product of cronyism. There was definitely a, hey, you know, we're going to buy the land from somebody we like. He'll make us a good deal because Tooth Carry is not growing, so you're not going to make the money off of it. Like, people say, I'm going to do a new subdivision. They go, oh, people thought that maybe back in the 60s and the 70s that they would come up with something to try to fix up Tooth Carry, make it a little better, be able to profit off of this. But in the end, it really it didn't work out. Land purveyors, land speculators. The last one was a man named George. He's in Georgetown. And that was the last new development that was ever done. And that was done way before I showed up on this, 1995. I think since I came in 1995 up until probably about now, there's been probably 5 or 6 new construction houses in Tooth and Carry. Mostly built by one of them was built by somebody who was building a new hotel, and that was part of the deal, was that they would get a nice house out of the deal. And they got a nice house out of the deal. Nice. It's kind of cheap, though, to be honest. Newer houses are cool. Anyway, and most of the ranchers, if the ranch house is falling apart, they just throw a double wide trailer on it. Here's a guy who didn't. This got put up while I was here. And looks like they're still kind of working on it. Still trying to be there. Anyway, second rant. And there's still, ranching still is pretty decent money. You can still make quite a bit of money as a rancher. But you've got to be big. You know, and if you say, yeah, I'm a young kid and I'm going to get into this, you're going, oh, okay. So now you're going to have to run it more like a business. You can't just be, you don't start as a farmhand and then you graduate up to being a rancher and you're still basically kind of doing a lot of sweat equity through it. That doesn't happen much before. It is rich people investing in land. Now, that's true because a lot of this stuff around Tooth and Carry, the land is just painful, cheap. And it makes it so that that people don't that somebody really rich will come in and they'll swoop all this stuff up. They'll swoop in, grab several ranches. Is the sign going out? This place has been for sale for years. They have a sign. Somebody finally just bought it. And trust me, it's probably somebody that not only bought this, bought Tooth and Carry Mountain and everything else about it. And it's just because they're rich and they need to plow that money into something so it just doesn't get taken in taxes. And this is really, it ends up being kind of a weird tax dodge. Right now they're really going for the Racino again. They may very well get the new Racino. And there's a couple of contenders. Where's Bowman? Bovis has the upside of, hey, we got the airmen. These kids are going to be able to get those airmen to come in here and spend all their spare money. Oh, 205. That's a better price. Well, that's price better over at the little truck stop. Anyway, the office here is 205. I'm just about to Mir Cottage. The place that we're going to be, the plan is to move into it, Now, I don't know what's going to happen. God's going to have to stop me because there's no practical way to make it not happen. I need to stop this recording and start another one. I'm going to keep doing this while I'm working here. Okay. Well, talk to you later. Bye.